Welcome to Pharma Docs with your hosts, myself, Dr. Jay Resnick, and Dr. John Robertson. Practicing oral surgeons bring you the latest and greatest in pharmacology as it affects you in your daily dental practice.
Good evening.
Oh, what's happening here? Uh-oh. Let me just get rid of that. I think that was... Whoop. Okay.
Technology. You gotta love it, man.
I have our Facebook feed and I have our YouTube feed up on another monitor so I can make sure they're running properly. And we're getting the sound off of those too. So welcome to Pharma Docs, our November 23rd. This is our Thanksgiving edition because Thursday is Thanksgiving at our normal time. So we're coming to you live. I'm Dr. Jay Resnick. I'm in Los Angeles, California. And...
I'm Dr. John Robertson. I'm in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and we hope everybody's doing well this week. And like Jay said, it's just an awesome week for us with Thanksgiving come up. All of us have so much to be thankful for as well, too, Jay.
We sure do. How are things back there? What's the weather like in Hattiesburg?
Man, we're starting to get a little cold right now. And finally, because the dog days of summer stay around till about mid-September here. And it can be brutal down here, the humidity and the temperatures.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, it's getting kind of cold here. It was 72 today.
Wow. 72.
Yeah. I had to wear a jacket when I went out.
Okay,
let's get to it. We got three new drugs to talk about, and then we're going to pick up our discussion of non-steroidals.
Well, actually, Jay, we have so many other drugs we could talk about. I mean, there were several more released just this week, but let's go ahead and hit with drug number one.
Okay,
Qulipta,
and this is a drug that is for migraine headaches, actually for preventing migraine headaches. It's
correct.
One of the first drugs that actually prevents migraine headaches successfully. They've tried all kinds of things to prevent migraine, such as beta blockers, Botox, calcium channel blockers, tricyclic antidepressants, SSRIs, all of those to try to prevent migraines. And obviously, because there's so many of them that are used, no one works well. This works by a different mechanism. It's a calcitonin gene-related peptide receptor antagonist. And what the CGRP peptide does is that is what modulates the pain, the intracerebral swelling, of migraine headaches, and that's what causes the pain, the nausea, the visual scotoma or visual changes that we see with patients with migraine. So this is a unique drug, and it only works for patients with migraines. Migraines.
Jay, let me interject. It also works when all the other medicines have just done nothing for
right.
migraine sufferers. Yeah. And you know, the thing about it, we have those patients come in our office daily, and what we do could trigger a migraine, and which they're very fearful of.
Yeah, because migraine is a fairly poorly understood phenomenon.
Yes.
We know it has something to do with fluctuation of serotonin levels, and there are all kinds of things that affect the serotonin level, such as stress, such as lack of sleep, such as working too many hours. Those are all triggers or can be triggers for migraine, in addition to alcohol, caffeine, lights sometimes, stress of being in the dental office. All those things can trigger a migraine. And for most people, what they take is now to try to ablate the headache is a triptan, either sumatriptan, which is the older one, Imitrex, or rizatriptan, which is Maxide. And I can speak from experience. I've had migraines since high school, and the drugs work okay when you get a migraine. But if there's something out there now, the Qulipta, that will prevent migraines when nothing else seems to work, that's a great idea.
Right. So Pharma Nation. So when you see that patient out there and on the health history and the medication list might say CGRP, that's Qulipta.
Yeah.
All right. Because it's the first oral form for this type of medication as well, too.
There have been exciting
for migraine sufferers, such as Jay himself, too, as well.
Yeah, there have been injectables such as Emgali and Ajovy. And those are actually UMAB drugs that you remember from last week or 2 weeks ago are monoclonal antibody drugs. So they also modulate the immune system. And so there are plenty of side effects from those drugs. So, you know, we're really happy to, I'm happy to hear about Qulipta. The generic name is Atogepant, A-T-O-G-E-P-A-N-T. And it should be hitting the market, I think, pretty soon, if it's not already. So this is really a great drug. Now, John, there are, just like everything else in dentistry, there are drugs that we're going to prescribe that will affect the metabolism of Qulipta by affecting the cytochrome P450 system and either increasing the level or decreasing the level of this drug in the patient's blood, right?
Well, the primary one is going to be clarithromycin, Jay, right? But now also the ketoconazole as well, too.
Yeah.
Or your patient might be on, say, St. John's wort. And when we do our little section on herbals as well, too, St. John's wort can be a significant player in messing up the CYP enzyme systems, which can really have a major effect on medications that our patients are on.
Yeah, by blocking that metabolic pathway, you're increasing the level of these drugs. And on the flip side, dexamethasone that we may give our patients does just the opposite. It induces cytochrome P450 and will lead to decreased levels of this drug. Even the patient thinks they're on their standard dose, and we give them dexamethasone either in surgery or by pill form, and it can significantly drop their level, and they can get migraines because of that. So we've got to be careful about that. And of course, the other thing we've got to worry about is, let's see, what was it? Any patients with hepatic impairment will also have an increased level of this drug. So any patients that come in that are on this drug, hopefully it'll be a miracle drug for people that suffer from migraines.
Yes.
But we've got to know what this drug is, because we're going to start seeing it on our medical histories. And we want to be informed so that we give our patients the best care.
Now, Jay, you mentioned something from 2 weeks ago. You know, we also talked about Aduhelm, which is the first ever drug to combat beta amyloid.
Right.
For Alzheimer's. They just announced this week the first trial for a nasal vaccine for Alzheimer's. Remember how we were talking about we hope more stuff? Because, I mean, this is debilitating to about 6 to 8 million people and their families.
Yeah.
So I just feel like hope is on the horizon. Okay, so let's move into drug two.
Okay.
Kerendia.
Kerendia.
K-E-R-E-N-D-I-A. Finerenone. And it's a non-steroidal selective mineralocorticoid receptor or antagonist, MRA. And it's used in the treatment of patients with chronic kidney disease, also associated due to type 2 diabetes, Jay.
Yeah.
So
it works by blocking aldosterone, which, as you know, aldosterone helps or makes patients retain water and potassium and sodium. So by blocking that, it's basically acting as a diuretic. In fact, you could call this the diuretic for diabetics.
Yeah. Wow. I love it.
So what are the benefits of this drug over other diuretics? Like, well, Lasix, of course, you have to supplement the patient with potassium, but spironolactone is another potassium sparing diuretic. So what can this prevent? What's the benefit of Kerendia over other diuretics?
Well, it can help these patients who are in end-stage renal disease, ERSD, that we're very concerned about, because as we continue to progress and lose our renal function, it also affects the drugs that we write. We have to make dosage modifications on that as well too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also diabetics
can help prevent heart attack as well too for them.
I was going to say diabetics have a lot of cardiovascular issues too.
Absolutely.
And so this drug hopefully will prolong the development of end stage renal disease, but also hopefully reduce the risk of cardiac events.
Right. So the bottom line is when that patient comes in your office, you're going to see somebody in end-stage renal disease taking this drug. And we've got to also be concerned about drug interactions. You know, we talked about clarithromycin on the last drug. Same one here, because combining that drug with Kerendia can lead to hyperkalemia.
Yeah.
High potassium levels. That's not good, which can lead into kidney failure, muscle paralysis, irregular heartbeat rhythm or dysrhythmias, and cardiac arrest.
Yeah, for sure. Because this drug is metabolized through the cytochrome P450 system, and erythromycin, clarithromycin are inhibitors of that, of the metabolism. So the blood concentration goes up. Cipro.
Dexamethasone that you talked about on the last drug as well too, Jay. Mm-hmm. It can significantly reduce the level of this drug.
Yeah, and another drug is ciprofloxacin, can also increase the drug level of this in the patient's system. So you got to be really careful if a patient is on this that you don't prescribe them cipro, because that can throw them into hyperkalemia, which, as John said, has nothing good about it. Leads to a lot of complications.
You may have that patient that has multiple drug allergies to various antibiotics, and you're like, okay, what can I give here? Mm-hmm. I might go with E-myosin. I might go Cipro. Uh-oh. Now you've caused an adverse drug reaction here.
Yeah.
So again, let's keep up with the drug trackers and all that. All right, Jay, let's go into drug three. Okay. Invega
is a long-acting injectable antipsychotic, an atypical antipsychotic, which is a second generation, and it's injectable. As opposed to the normal antipsychotic medications like Haldol, Thorazine, and Prolixin, which were the first generation. And the big issue with these drugs is the side effects. It causes fatigue, emotional blunting, decreased sex drive, and the big thing that it causes is tardive dyskinesia. So involuntary muscle spasms. So those are the first generation antipsychotics, are known as the typical antipsychotics. And the second generation antipsychotics are like Abilify, Risperdal, Seroquel, and Zyprexa. And those have much less musculoskeletal complications and less of the other complications. But still, the problem with these antipsychotics for schizophrenic patients who really need them is that they don't like the side effects. And so they stop taking their medication. And the nice thing about Invega is injectable and it's long lasting. And it comes in three different varieties. Invecta Sustena is a sustained release, is where the name comes from, I think. Lasts 1 month, so they need a monthly injection. Now, the next iteration of that was Invega Trinzia, TRI. So what do you think, how often do you think that gets dosed?
I'm going to have to go with 3 months.
You got it. And the new one, which is dosed, well, actually I'll give you the name first. Invega Hafyura.
You got to love these names.
Every 6 months, every half year. So,
love it.
Yeah, this is great. So, sometimes it's nice when they name a drug something that you can remember, for one, but also makes some sense as far as what it does or the dosing or other things. So,
and two, Jay, so right there, the injectable helps us so much more, because you just said just a few minutes ago, the non-compliance factor.
Yeah, it's huge.
Once you get the injection, there's no backing out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I did psychiatry in medical school, we saw a lot of schizophrenics in the locked psych ward, where I spent 6 weeks, and that was the big talk, the big problem with treating these schizophrenics is that they don't want to take their medicine. They take it maybe for a couple of days. They don't like the way it makes them feel, and they stop taking it. So these injectables are, I think, are a godsend for schizophrenic patients to make sure that they're properly medicated and can function.
They're on other medications too, right, Jay?
Generally, besides just that drug. Yeah, I mean, one. They're usually on a couple others.
I mean, they could be on like some SSRIs or SNRIs.
Yeah, that's for sure. And one thing, actually, the difference between the first and second generation is the first generation drugs blocked dopamine. Actually, both first and second generation blocked dopamine, whereas the second generation blocks the serotonin antagonist. So it increases the serotonin level just like an SSRI. And what did we talk about 2 weeks ago?
Serotonin syndrome.
If we get our patient tramadol, which is a very common post-operative pain medication.
Or meparidine.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we say, let's give you a muscle relaxer, we'll go to cyclobenzaprine.
Yeah.
All right. So we got to be worried about those.
Yeah. Or a drug that we use in IV sedation every day, ketamine.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So if you get a phone call that night after you gave one of those prescriptions, hey, my patient is agitated, confused, tachycardic, high fever, start thinking serotonin syndrome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's ER time.
Yeah.
All right.
Time to get him to the ER. Exactly.
Because so, I mean, there's some medication, like Jay said, that, a few weeks ago, that the cyproheptadine is one of the drugs used to help reverse serotonin syndrome.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And they only have that. You're not going to have that in your office. You're going to have it in the hospital, in the ER. No. Okay.
That's great stuff there, Jay, because again, we have a patient that's schizophrenic, not getting a drug that's going to reduce their noncompliance,
right,
but they're on other medications. And we got to know those, because if the serotonin levels are spiked, we got to know which drugs we can write.
Right.
And then
exactly.
Again, it doesn't hurt to make that phone call to their physician and get a medical consultation, mm-hmm, not a medical clearance, Jay.
Yeah.
A medical consultation.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yep. Because the medical clearance essentially means nothing for the most part, because the physicians don't know what it is we do. I sometimes have a patient that's got a laundry list of medical problems and medications, and just to make sure that they're safe for some light IV sedation, I'll send a note to the physician just saying, are any issues that I should know about with this patient, any problems they've had in the past with sedation, please let me know. And I get back just a note, patient is okay for dental work.
Right.
Which doesn't help me much at all.
That's mighty helpful.
And I'm sure we've all received letters from physicians or faxes that say exactly that same thing.
And we will continue to receive that. Okay, yeah. So let's get back into our great discussion on our NSAIDs, some of our favorite drugs to write, because, Jay, I just heard this week, when we first started PharmaDocs, we talked about the number of opioid deaths were 93,000. Mm-hmm. Jay, that number has now gone over 100,000 people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we all know what a significant problem this is, and it's multi-layered. It's the drug manufacturers all the way down to the pharmacies and to the prescribers. We're all contributed to this in some way or another, and so we're all trying to get away from prescribing narcotics. And generally, as I mentioned last time, and I mentioned this time, is tramadol usually is the most powerful opioid that I'm opioid like medication that I ever prescribe.
Right.
I can't remember the last time I gave someone Percocet. Maybe once or twice in the past 5 years. And Vicodin, I don't prescribe anymore either, because I use non-steroidals.
Well, during my lectures, and whenever I do talk about opioids, when that patient, and we have all been there, look, the only thing that works on me is Percocet. That is a red flag.
Yeah. I'm allergic to all hydrocodone. The only one thing that works for me is Perca something.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, and trust me, they know it by heart. Okay.
Yeah.
Everybody out there listening to us has a story to tell about that.
That's
okay.
For
so
sure.
All right, let's get into the differences now with our NSAIDs. And of course, the milestone is aspirin.
Yeah.
Okay.
The first.
The very first right there. Yeah. And it's got a long history of safety. Mm-hmm. In fact, we talked about last week, Jay, I had somebody reach out to me and they said they had heard me in my lecture when I talk about the aspirin ibuprofen thing.
Yeah.
And they said that was just a great thing to bring up. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to come up with some type of little mnemonic if I could. So we're going to go ASA 1, Ibu 2. So ASA is aspirin. So you'll take that first.
Right.
The ibuprofen, you'll take 2 hours after your aspirin. All right. So many of the original studies were done was using ibuprofen 400 milligram. Mm-hmm. All right. Because we know ibuprofen affects the cardioprotective ability of aspirin. That's why you can't take it together.
You can't take them together. Exactly. Yeah.
So aspirin first, 2 hours later, ibuprofen. Mm-hmm. All right. And then people ask me all the time, what about the other NSAIDs? Well, you have to assume that the other NSAIDs are going to affect it as well, too.
Yeah. They all have cardiac.
Spread that out.
Yeah. They all have cardiac side effects depending on whether they lean more towards COX-1 or COX-2 as far as where they are on the spectrum there.
And document that you went over this with your patient. You told them when to take the aspirin and when to take their non-steroidal after their aspirin.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Okay. So now, Jay.
So why do we still use aspirin? There's so many other drugs that are available, all these newer non-steroidals.
Well, like I said, it's just a great long history of safety. Okay. I mean, the cardioprotective ability of the 81 milligram, they're also showing studies about how it can be preventative for colorectal cancer, Jay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So although I read something in the medical literature this morning, saying that the preventative 81 milligram of aspirin is not indicated for most patients, only if they have a history of cardiac disease, either in the family or they themselves have had cardiac disease, that the risk of bleeding or GI problems outweighs the risk of having a cardiac problem or stroke. So right now, physicians are not recommending that the average person, let's say from 40 to 65, take aspirin on a daily basis to try to prevent heart attacks and strokes. So that's a big change in what we've been talking about in the last 10 years or so, or even longer. Yeah. So I found that really interesting.
And of course, you know, it's the same thing about the study of coffee. Is it good for you? And then, you know, 6 months later, there'll be another study out as well too. So, okay. Now, one other thing. AERD, aspirin exacerbated respiratory disease, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to our audience out there, somebody may come in and say, underneath their health history, that they have asthma, nasal polyps, and they have a sensitivity to aspirin and non-steroidals. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the triad associated with AERD. This disease is also known, Jay, as Samter's disease. Mm-hmm. SAMTER*S. So we have to be careful about giving them non-steroidals or aspirin with this.
Yeah. And another physical sign that you see, especially in younger patients, is if you look under the eyes and they have dark circles under their eyes and it's a young patient and they talk about, you know, they have allergies. We call those allergic shiners. And they foretell, you know, allergies to multiple medications and they're at real high risk for this syndrome.
Okay. So just remember that, y'all. Samter's disease. Okay. So moving in, the next one is celecoxib. We talked about that great COX-2 inhibitor. Low risk of GI damage. It's a great drug. I think we'll continue to prescribe it more and more out there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely is protective for the GI tract, but the big issue with it is cardiac because it's a COX-2 selective. And what COX-2 does is it inhibits through the cyclooxygenase the formation of prostaglandin A2, which is an antiplatelet factor. And if, and so when you block that, you increase the coagulability or increase the likelihood that they're going to develop some type of thrombosis. And at the same time that it's acting to inhibit thromboxane A2, it doesn't inhibit prostaglandin I2. It inhibits thromboxane A2, which is pro clot formation. So you have basically the double whammy there.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Diclofenac, also known as Voltaren. This is a very potent anti-inflammatory, Jay, probably the most potent on the market.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 6 times stronger than indomethacin, 40 times stronger than aspirin. And what is the significant thing about diclofenac? Cardiotoxicity.
Mm-hmm.
It's the highest risk of heart attack and stroke among all of the NSAIDs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is something, if you do prescribe it, not for a long-term basis, all right?
Yeah.
Acute yeah. only, short-term and
I,
only.
Yeah, I would just avoid days. It in a patient that has cardiac issues.
Yeah. Great point. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, just avoid it because this has the highest risk of heart attack and stroke of all the non-steroidals.
Okay, so moving right along, we get into, you know, we've already talked about ibuprofen. It's a great drug. We mm-hmm. use it. And then we got indomethacin, yeah. all right? And so, you know, Jay, this drug also carries a high cardiovascular risk as well, too.
Right.
It's a very potent inhibitor of the COX enzymes yeah. also. But it's also more antipyretic than aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so about kills, 10 times stronger.
Yeah, so it reduces pain sensations.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, this drug isn't used all that often anymore, but only in certain circumstances like ankylosing spondylitis, sometimes rheumatoid arthritis.
Right.
And when I was going through med school and residency, it was used a lot for gout in a combination with allopurinol.
Allopurinol, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
All right, so then move right along to ketorolac, also known as Toradol.
Yeah.
It's the most one selective enzyme. It's my favorite, Jay.
Yeah.
I love writing this drug, okay? Yeah.
Well, it's not only is it a great drug in pill form, but it also comes as an injectable form,
injectable.
Either IM or IV. So, you know, we'll if a patient, let's say in recovery, they're complaining of some discomfort, I'll give them 60 milligrams IV of Toradol, and this relieves their pain very significantly. In fact, if you give 30 milligrams IV, that has the pain inhibiting equivalent of 10 milligrams of morphine. That's like 100 that's like 100 milligrams of Demerol.
Right. And Jay, that's what I like to give at the end of my surgeries. Mm-hmm. I give IV 30 milligrams yeah. of Toradol. Then I follow up 12 hours later with the PO form mm-hmm. with one Tylenol.
Yeah.
Okay. So I got the best of both worlds and no narcotics are given. Okay.
Yeah. yeah.
And mom and dad are happy as can be. Okay.
I'll bet.
All right.
I'll bet.
And then we move into meloxicam. Now, meloxicam can be a favorable drug for us as well, too, simply because it's got two dosing strengths,
mm-hmm.
15 milligrams once a day or 7.5 milligrams twice a day. Right. So now mm-hmm. you're getting back into like the Toradol thing.
Yeah. Well, it's got a nice long half-life.
Yes.
And yeah, that's why we can do that. We only need to dose it once or twice a day.
And Jay, I'm always looking for the easiest way I can dose for my patients mm-hmm. when they go home.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that once daily dosage of our yeah. various medications.
That's why I give patients amoxicillin 875.
Yes.
Rather than five, it's a twice a day dose, and it's a lot easier for them to remember to take that than something that's three times a day or Keflex that's four times a day. Although Keflex does come in at 750, which is twice a day. However, yes. It's really hard to find.
Oh,
in fact, I've had pharmacists tell me it doesn't exist. You know, did you mean 500? Like, no, I meant 750. That's the dose for twice a day. If you don't have it, just say that. Yeah, don't question that. I don't know my Keflex.
So Jay, that brings us to the end, basically saying, okay, which NSAID is the best?
Mm-hmm. It depends.
It's patient dependent. I mean,
right.
I may have a patient in that does great on ibuprofen 600 milligrams three times a day, or they may call back, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
But Toradol is fabulous for me, Doc.
Yeah.
I mean, some patients I like the meloxicam.
Yeah. Just like with over the counter, you have your over the counter ibuprofen, which is either Motrin or Motrin or Advil. And some patients prefer that, and others like the naproxen, which is Aleve.
Yes.
And they say it works better for them. So it's same thing with all these other drugs. It's very patient dependent. And it also depends, like we said, we've been talking about, it depends on their medical history, especially if they've got a history of GI issues or cardiac issues. That's going to sway which drug you're going to use preferably with this patient.
And if minus those two conditions right there, if we're able to do that combination of NSAID with acetaminophen, wow.
Yeah.
It's a great combination. And we've got to encourage our patients, let them know this will work, but I need you to stay on it for the next 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? That's what I do in my office is I switched over from prescribing narcotics.
Yes.
As I mentioned, to patients taking two ibuprofen, 400 milligrams, plus two extra strength Tylenol, 1,000 milligrams, about every 6 to 8 hours. And if they stay on that for the first 48 hours, and it's uncommon that I have a patient that needs to take that backup pain medication, which I use, as I mentioned, the tramadol.
All right. So, Jay, that wraps us up with the NSAIDs. Of course, we'll always come back and talk to them about this or that because there's going to be more drugs coming out there. And like I said, even though we brought up three more, there's been three more released as well, too. And our next show, PharmaNation, will be December 9th.
Yep. December 9th. So, remember the second and fourth Thursdays of the month is our normal time at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time and 8 p.m. Dr. Robertson time. I'm sorry, 7 p.m. Dr. Robertson
7 p.m.
time. Yeah.
And I just can't thank everybody listening to us. I hope you'll share it with other people.
We're
practicing dentists just like you. We're in those trenches every day. We're in that daily grind. Mm-hmm. And we just want to see everybody do well out there.
Yeah.
All right.
That's for sure. All right.
And I just wish everybody from my state and happy Thanksgiving, Jade. Same to you and your family.
Yep, thanks very much. In fact, I picked up the stuff to make my famous chocolate pecan pie on the way home from the office today. So that's going to be my project for tomorrow afternoon.
Outstanding.
All right.
Outstanding. So everybody, thank y'all again.
All right. Have a great Thanksgiving, and we will see you on December 9th.
See you then.